Okay, so any other questions? I know there are more questions. Martin, Menthol.
How do we deal with someone who has given themselves to the passions?
I'm sorry, has given themselves?
How do we deal with someone who has given themselves to the passions and they like where they're at?
Like me. Which is the sad thing.
I worked with a bunch of ex-military men. And some of them have given themselves to a lot of the passions of the flesh. And they like where they're at. You know, they don't want to hear about God, and they don't want to hear that talk. So how do we deal with that? With, you know, there is a certain degree of, as you say, a mental illness caused by the passions, but that's exactly where they want to be.
Okay. There can be mental illness caused by the passions, but then there's just sort of the regular insanity of human nature of in its fallenness that they, you know, would have given into. And I would, the first thing I would say is, if I'm going to deal with somebody that I think has given into the passions, I need to see where I have given into the compassions. I, who ought to know a lot better, and yet I still do. Because if I can't do that, I can't meet that person on a place where I can possibly help them. You know, if I can't realize the areas in my life where, you know, I just struggle and fall and struggle and fall, and sometimes I don't struggle because I'm happy enough to be where I'm at, you know, then I don't have anything I can say to that person. So that would be the first thing I would say. The second thing is, you know, I don't think anybody is 100% happy with where they're at. You know, it's like, I'm happy doing the thing in a way, but I'm not happy with the consequences. And because of my sinfulness, I blind myself to the fact that the consequences are directly related to the thing I'm doing. So, you know, St. John Chrysostom, again, he has this idea, which is basically work with people where they're at, take the best motive they have, or at least, if you can't even find a good motive, if you can find a motive that will push them in a good place, into a better place, use that. So, for example, you know, he says, so if there's this guy going around and he's despoiling widows and orphans' livelihoods, you don't talk to him about heaven and hell because he couldn't care less. So what do? You say to him, you know, if you want to make money, this is not the way to do it. You know, because, I mean, he doesn't go on, but obviously the idea is, you know, if that's how you make your money, someone's going to be really, really mad at you, and you're going to end up in a bad, you know, bad place, even in this world, sooner or later, right? And so you move bit by bit away from things. Let's see, what was the other thing I was going to say? There was something else I was going to say in relation to that, but I can't remember right now. Anyway, so there's at least those things, you know. Oh, I know what it is the one thing that I think most people I know desperately want and don't have is peace. And so a lot of times, you know, if a conversation comes up, and most of the time it's not our place to start conversations, you know, unless we have a responsibility for that person because we're an authority, usually it's not for me to start a conversation. But if a conversation comes up, you know, it's like, well, what peace is there that in what you're doing? You know, because most people know that what they're doing is killing them, you know. And if they can't say that, if they can't admit it, they can admit, you know, I totally lack peace. And so I find, you know, that seems to be a good place to go with people. I'm sorry, is that okay, Paul?
What does the church or the fathers say about someone who commits suicide, and particularly someone who's deemed mentally ill or is
Okay, yeah, good question. There actually is a canon that, you know, if a person is mentally ill and commits suicide, that is different from a person who commits suicide knowing what they're doing. I'm not sure what it actually said, whether it's like they can be buried in the church, but there is a canon that specifically addresses that, and so that person is treated differently. Suicide is not a good place to go. You know, and generally speaking, you know, in modern times, you have some people being like more flexible on this. But generally, if a person commits suicide, you don't even pray for them. Like, you don't pray for them, period. And some people, it's like, okay, you can pray for them in your private prayers, but you don't pray for them in church. And yet, you know, there is the compassion of God. There was a very interesting story. It wasn't about a person who had committed suicide, but it was about this, you know, really important man who had lived a very bad life. And so he had died, and they were having this big, you know, ostentatious funeral. And a fool for Christ comes up and is basically like, you know, you can't do this. You give him a very, very, you know, shabby funeral, just sort of throw him in the grave. And it's like, how could we do that? And it's like, give God something to be gracious to him about. You know, and it's, if you take that from a very logical way, you can go places where you don't need to be, because of course God can be gracious whenever he wants to be gracious, but it doesn't help me that God is gracious if I don't accept it. And something about that, you know, so it's not, it isn't, we can always hope for everybody, but because suicide is so serious, you know, the church makes that statement by what we do and don't do. You know, so it is a very serious thing. But there is a difference. The person who is mentally ill does not know what they're doing. And that's something actually that I don't know if I discussed this last time, but generally speaking, the fathers don't hold the mentally ill and the demonically possessed accountable for what they've done, what they do when they're in that state. There is accountability for getting there, you know, and some people get there by doing some pretty rotten things. Some people get there by doing things that seem pretty mild to us. So it isn't like you have to be worse than everybody else to get into that state. But once you're in that state, generally speaking, there's not considered responsibility for it. Yes?
Could you get into that state by what other people do too?
There are some stories in the lives of the saints that do suggest that, yes. And that makes no sense if you look at it as a punishment for being an evil person. But if you look at it in terms of a healing of our, you know, our fallenness, then some people are capable of taking a very, very, very severe, harsh medical treatment, and others aren't. You know, and so, yeah, you know, there are certainly stories of people that, you know, they basically didn't do anything to get into that place, and some of them became saints. So, yeah. Michelle?
I mean, what's an example of somebody who committed suicide that wasn't insane?
Okay, well, see, yeah, there's the different aspects of insanity. In a sense, I mean, anyone who sins is insane, right? So in that sense, yes, of course, if you commit suicide, that's incredibly insane. But it's just some people, you know, basically, you know, within the context of our fallenness, they know what they're doing. And it's just like, I'm tired of life, and, you know, I just give up. And, you know, if I'm a Christian, and doing that, I'm making some pretty egregious statements about who I am in relation to God by doing such a thing. Because I don't belong to myself. You know, I belong to God. So to the extent that I realize what I'm doing, I'm in really bad shape. You know, but it's, you know, thanks be to God, it is not my job to figure out how insane you are, you know, or anyone else is, or, you know, such and such a person, you know, killed themselves. I don't know, and I don't have to know. You know, and there's a story, I think it's in the life of St. John de Kronstadt, but I'm not sure, of a woman whose husband killed himself by jumping off of a cliff. And, you know, you're not supposed to pray for suicides. So she was, you know, heartbroken and wanted to pray for her husband, and she went to the saint, who I think was St. John of Kronstadt. And he said, you know, I had a vision of him, and when he jumped, before he reached the ground, he had repented. So go ahead and pray for him. So we never know. You know, nobody ever knows what's going on in somebody else. I don't even know what's going on in my mind. Why should I think I understand what's going on in your mind? You know. So we can always hope. But again, and we do live in a, you know, in a different time, and there is a lot of suicide. There's a lot of despair, and you know, the church in many ways is being more flexible on this one. You know, we've always been instructed by Mother Victoria, you know, that if people give us names of people who have committed suicide, that we pray for them privately, but we don't pray for them in the service. So, you know, there is that kind of flexibility.
Mother?
Yes?
I don't know if it's good to get this specific, but I'm just kind of thinking in my own mind in terms of trying to distinguish between people who know what they're doing and, you know, people who don't know what they're doing.
Right.
And one example I'm thinking of, it seems like people who know what they're doing are cases of euthanasia, where people like very deliberately plan their death. Does that kind of fit into that paradigm?
I think it can. You know, I think also, you know, we've been so brainwashed in our culture about so many things that, you know, I think a person who does such a thing in our day and age is in a different place from a person who might have done that, you know, in the flower of Byzantium. And there is that thought that you do see, that there is a distinction between a person who has learned something and a person who hasn't. So, like, there's a story that comes up every so often. I forget even where I read it, but I hear it every so often. Like, there were two young orphan girls who had been sold into slavery. And one of them was sold into a dancing troupe, which, you know, pretty much meant that she was going to live a very licentious life, okay? The other one was bought by a nun who, you know, took care of her and taught her the monastic life and, you know, was a good nun, you know, raised her well. Those two girls, if they both did the same sexual sin, are going to be judged very differently. Okay, because, you know, one, look, that's the situation she was in. She might not even have known on any kind of conscious level that she wasn't supposed to be doing this, whereas the other one had absolutely every opportunity. So there is all this gray. And again, it's not my responsibility to figure out which shade of gray anybody is. My responsibility is to find the black inside me and repent of it. And if there's anything that's not black, you know, thanks be to God. you know, but just in that, realizing that, it, Again, you know, to see my own sin makes it much easier to love other people if I have hope in God. You know, we spend a lot of our time, like, trying to put our sin under the, you know, under the rug, sweep it under the rug. And there is certainly a very sick way in which we can get all, you know, all consumed by our sin. I mean, to be consumed by my sin, obviously, is a bad thing. But, you know, the difference between a good way of realizing I'm a sinner and a bad way of realizing a sinner is hope in God. You know, the prodigal son knew what he'd done was really rotten. But he also knew that he had a really good father. And even though he didn't know quite how good his father was, because he wasn't quite willing to hope that much, and maybe at that point he didn't quite know how good his father was, period, he had hope that his father was good. And, you know, I'm a mess, and every day I find out I'm more of a mess than I knew I was. But I know that that is God's gift to me, to show me that, so that I can, you know, get out of that pigsty and start walking home. And another thing in relation to passions, you know, for those of you who are all, and I'm sure every one of you is struggling with something that, you know, you don't know how to get rid of. In St. John of the Ladder, you often hear him say something like he'll be at the end of a chapter, you know, about some particular vice or virtue. And he'll say, you know, some people just have this naturally, the good, the virtue. You know, they just don't have to struggle with this vice. But they don't win a crown. You know, and then he'll go into the next chapter. And some people have this one naturally, but they don't get a crown. So even if you're struggling with passions and you're aware of them and you're not insane in the sense that, you know, we tend to think of insanity, you know, if you're struggling mightily, maybe it's because you're mighty. Maybe it's because God has given you the ability to really, really struggle and really, really get those crowns. And if you're seeing somebody else who, you know, they're angry all the time, they're this all the time, they're that all the time, you know, how do you know what they're doing at night and how bitterly they're repenting? You know, I know somebody personally well who struggled his entire life with rage. I might only say anger, with rage. And, you know, he pretty much died that way. But it made him so humble, you know, because he didn't want to be that way, and he didn't know how not to be that way. And, you know, in the end of his days, I mean, he was, you know, barely, I mean, couldn't really walk, and he'd get on his knees and pray, you know, God, deliver me from this, you know. And so, we don't know where a person is, we don't know where they came from. You know, I use this illustration a lot. You know, the word in Greek, sin, is amartano, which is like, I missed the mark. You know, so like you could use that like in archery, right? So it's like if I am shooting for the, whatever that piece of paper is in the back there, it's something about our, something very important that I can never remember what it is. But anyway, there's this piece of paper in a frame right back there, okay? So, like, if I'm shooting for that, and what I actually hit is a Reuben's cap over there. Sorry, Reuben. you say, you sinned. Boy, you really missed the mark. And yeah, I did. But what if I was in San Diego when I was trying to do that? And what if I had a broken arm? And what if nobody ever showed me how to use an arrow, a bow and arrow? Then if I caught Reuben's cap, it's like, that's a miracle, you know, that I could do that well. And so we can judge and should judge most of the time in the objective sense that a certain thing is not what was meant. This is missing the mark, you know. So that if there's a little girl who grew up in a dancing troupe at a time when that meant a very promiscuous lifestyle, she missed the mark. But, you know, she may also be a compassionate, loving person who's doing her best within this lifestyle that she was stuck with. And when she has to stand before God, she may hear, well done. You know, and so say that, you know, so I'm shooting for that, the middle of that piece of paper, whatever it is, and I get 1 centimeter away. And you're thinking, wow, you're really good. Well, what if I was standing right next to it? Then if I'm that far off, it's just because I'm lazy and I'm not paying attention to what I'm doing. And so, you know, we cannot judge ourselves or others in that sense of how well we're doing in that subjective sense. But it's just for me to say, okay, that's the mark. I hit Reuben's cap. I got to do better. You know, or that's the mark. I'm a centimeter away. Thank God, but I still, you know, I'm still not there. So I still keep going. And I say this because, you know, we deal with, in our culture, with despair. Depression is a huge thing. Despair is a huge thing. And so, you know, most of us, you know, are missing the mark. And so we vacillate between two things. We redefine the mark. Oh, I really was trying to hit Reuben's cap. Or we just want to, you know, say, oh, I can't do this. I give up. There's no hope for me ever in the world. And neither of those is a good place to be. But, you know, so the realization, again, that quote from St. John Chrysostom, if I have to struggle to my last minute, then okay, I'll do it. And if I do that, then I depart as a victor.